international loan syndication. We're trying to understand the nature, structure and operation of the syndicated lending market. I've provided materials on the system with a full chapter, with full outlines, diagrams and other supporting documentation to explain all of this. We can also summarize this in terms of our basic slide presentation, set of core slide points and statements. What we'll do is this. We're going to look at syndication. We'll do solicitation and lead bank function, syndicate rules and relations, syndicate agents, and then we'll draw some comments and conclusions. What we're simply going to do is this. Syndication basics. This is the euro loan market. It's the euro dollar market. Banks do not want to lend the full amount. They can lend the full amount because all they're simply doing is drawing the funds necessary from the interbank markets anyway. They can easily lend the funds, but what they want to do is spread the risk, principally the credit risk. The credit risk is the risk of counterparty default, that the borrower will not pay interest during term and repay principal on maturity. So what we have is this. We have a syndicate. There will be two or more banks. The largest syndicate I was involved with was the Eurotunnel deal. All of the major banks in London wanted to be involved. The syndicate was over 100. I think it was about 114 banks. So for a meeting, you'd have 114 banks with two lawyers from each firm. How could you possibly manage that? In practice, they had, with very large syndicates like that, you'll have a management group. So there was a smaller management team of core banks and then the legal advisors to those banks. They were the ones that were principally directing and doing the core negotiation. Although for larger meetings, everybody actually had to attend. But that was the largest syndicate I was involved with. So what we have is this. We'll have a group of banks making funds available to a group of borrowers. Usually because there's so much money involved. For example, 20 million, 50, 60, 100 million, billion. You won't lend to one borrower, you lend to one borrower and a series of connected companies. Very often the parent borrower, parent company, and then a number of subsidiaries. So, how do we understand all of this? We've got the syndication basics. We're advancing funds on common terms under a single agreement. There's a single sole loan agreement. However, each drawdown under the loan agreement constitutes a separate legal obligation, a separate debt. So the loans are actually counted not by the loan agreement, because there's only one, it's the number of drawdowns. In practice, you'll normally have two facilities, an A and a B. The A is a fixed term facility for a fixed duration. You draw down, you repay, you cannot draw down again. But you'll also have a shorter, smaller revolver. You can draw down, repay. Possibly 1 month, 2 months, 6 months revolver. So we have a term loan structure, and then we have a bank syndicate. We have the term loan agreement, and then we have the syndication clauses that establish the relationship between the banks. The syndicate documentation principally consists of three docs. You've got the term sheet, you've got the mandate letter, and you've got the information memorandum. What will have to happen is the lead bank, the arranging bank, is going to be setting up the deal. It approaches the borrower, or the borrower will approach it. Usually it's the lead bank, the arranging bank, will have approached the borrower first. They ask for a mandate to approach other banks to collect, set up the syndicate, and then draft the documentation to make the funds available. That's what the mandate letter's for. It's a letter of instruction to the arranging bank to proceed with the deal. It's usually exclusive, and it's usually conditional on all other satisfactory terms and conditions being agreed, as well as the credit assessment undertaken by the other banks being appropriate of the credit risk worthiness of the borrower. So we have the mandate letter, and then the term sheet is going to summarize all of the core terms and conditions. Initially, it was the financial terms, but now it will be the financial terms and the legal terms. In practice, we normally use standard term sheets. The term sheets are effectively mini loan agreements. It was essentially the contents outline from the loan document that we would use, and we would just mark in the key clauses, the amount, the interest, the term, the repayment, the drawdown. In practice now, it's a mini loan agreement, and we'll specify all of the core financial provisions, all of the core legal clauses, obligations, including specifically the default provisions, and we'll have all of this set out in the term sheet. What we're then going to do is use that to actually draft the final loan agreement. We also have a separate information memorandum. The information memorandum parallels a prospectus in the capital markets. It's essentially a document that provides and explains the history of the borrower's group, its business operations, its financial condition, and basically its future operations, including how it will raise funds to repay the loan. We have to be very careful because this is where we can have significant risks of misrepresentation, either innocent, negligent, or fraudulent misrepresentation, including statutory fraud is deceit, as well as statutory negligent misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act 1967. And one of the core functions of the lawyer in reviewing all the documentation is to make sure that there's no risk of misrepresentation arising. The syndicate rules, how can we summarise the relationship between the main banks? Equality, severality, proportionality, syndicate democracy, and then limited delegation of agency function. Limited delegation of function. The banks which make up the syndicate are professionals. They're acting in their own interest. They're dealing as principal, and they're more than capable of looking after themselves. They will not want to surrender important decisions to a majority. If in some cases there is a majority, it will be a qualified majority, which is 66 2/3 rather than a simple 50% majority vote. When it comes to important provisions, such as the amount, renegotiation, principal, term, they will not delegate that, and it will not become subject to consensus or other rule. It will be full unanimous voting. They will not delegate, allow this to be passed on to a subgroup, and they will not allow majority voting for these important decisions. Some of the textbooks refer to this in terms of, when they're looking at the nature of the syndication relationships, several commitments, agent bank administration, syndicate democracy, pro rata sharing. I take that, I restate it in terms of severality, equality, proportionality, syndicate democracy, limited agency function. I explain all of that in the chapter, and I tie it in with the core clauses which are used in practice in the main documentation. We've already identified the key documents. We've got the term sheet, the mandate, and then the importance of validity. Term sheet will summarise the key financials. So we always have the amount, the term, the interest, the drawdown, the repayment, and then the ancillary obligations. Validity here is important. There is a legal presumption that whenever you're negotiating, you have legal intent. There's a number of cases in this area. I list all of them in the chapter. For example, Branca versus Cabarro is just one of them. Because of this assumption of legal intent, you reverse that in practice by saying everything is subject to negotiation. Everything has to be negotiated. Only when you get to the very end, you have the final agreement and final signature and execution, are you entering into a legal agreement. So all negotiations up until then, every email, every text, every letter will say subject to negotiation for this reason. It's to reverse this presumption of legal intent. And then we'll look specifically at the lead bank. The arranging bank is the one who's going to set up the syndicate, approach the other banks, instruct the lawyers to draft the documentation, lead the negotiation process. Key functions are draft the information memorandum, solicit expressions of interest by other syndicate members, and then negotiate the documentation. Lead bank function, appointment and capacity, functions, liability, limitation and remedies. We come back to all of this. It's all dealt with in the chapter. Liability is very important. We need to consider misrepresentation is the key issue that arises. There is possible regulatory liability, although most of that we've now dealt with in practice. Certainly in the loan deals, we don't have to consider that because it's excluded. There are some specific qualifications which arise. There's an important decision called Fonds, for example, that considered that a loan agreement fell within a debenture and therefore could constitute a security, which caused a lot of concern, and a City of Lawyers group had to write to the Financial Conduct Authority and to the Treasury explaining their concerns with regard to this. The authorities explained this as just being a case on its own facts. So it could have had major implications, although we now simply assume it was only in relation to that specific set of circumstances. Generally, negotiating loan deals, entering into loan markets, and the euro dollar market as a whole from the loan perspective is not subject to direct regulation of any form. In terms of liability, we principally need to consider a misrepresentation, innocent, negligent and fraudulent at common law. Statutory negligent misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act 1967, and then statutory deceit under the Theft Act. There's various specific heads of liability and important case law on this. So the Theft Act 1968, Section 19, fraudulent misrepresentation, negligent misrepresentation, Misrepresentation Act, innocent misrepresentation, and I've summarised all of that on the slide. We then have to consider the rules on the limitation of limiting liability. There's certain general principles with regards to the construction of these clauses. They're basically contra proferentem, which means drafted and set against the party in whose interest they were prepared. They will not cover such issues as own credit assessment, information responsibility, approval and non-advice. What the banks do is they transfer assessment liability back onto the other banks. And the other banks, when they sign the document, effectively confirm or expressly state that they've undertaken their own credit assessment, so they're not relying on information provided by the lead bank or the agent bank. You cannot exclude liability for criminal liability, fraudulent misrepresentation, statutory liability, and then you're subject to the terms of the Unfair Contract Terms Act and the Misrepresentation Act. I deal with all of that in the paper. We then contrast the role and function of the lead bank with the syndicate bank, the agent bank. Agent bank is much more minor, more administrative. The agent bank manages the facility from the date of the loan agreement being entered into and first drawdown until repayment. This could be a 20-year responsibility. The arranging bank only comes in at the beginning, sets the facility up, and then very often will leave. Just some other additional provisions on the agent bank. Act subject to contract, no delegation. This is agency duties and then separate fiduciary duties. No conflict, no secret profit, due diligence. Again, we need to look at how we can limit the liability of the agent bank, how we can do that legally and effectively, and then we'll draw some final comment and conclusions. And with this, we can understand the nature of the syndicated lending structure and the relationship and relative rights and duties of all of the parties concerned.